thinking back, 2012 was a weird year. The movie Avengers was released. Windows released Windows 8 to like 9 people who cared. Mass Effect 3 came out and people realized RGB translated to WTF. But we also had a couple good things. Dragon's Dogma came out. Dishonored 1 was released. And a little game called Kingdoms of Amalur rolled onto store shelves. Also, the Mayan calendar, which prophesized the end of the world, had its math wrong. It was 8 years off. And that brings us to 2020. Yeah, 2020. If that list was restricted good stuff, we'd get a couple games on there and the fact that I didn't get mind-rendering syphilis, but also that Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning is coming out. Kingdoms of Amalur was the great value bacon versus Oscar Mayer's Skyrim at the time, a battle for the ages. While they played substantially differently, there was a keen desire of both of them to deliver a generic fantasy world that allowed you to explore it, at least somewhat at your own pace. Amalur went with a robust, if a bit arcadey, action system, and Skyrim went with what Bethesda has always done best, release a sandbox game, then forget to update it and let the fans fix your shit. Kingdoms of Amalur really has its own sort of space at this time, and while it is just a remaster, we've seen a lot of other companies handle remastering or remaking, especially lately, very well. Let's see if Kingdoms of Amalur can do it as well. If you like the video, maybe subscribe. Graphics are up first. So after playing this, I can say I think this is a perfect name for the game because at some point the devs must have looked at it and thought, you know what? I reckon that's enough, because every moment of this game, even side by side or not, it is hard to see a lot of improvements over the original. That's a testament to the game's original magic in using an almost World of Warcraft art style, which I very much adore, and the design chops of Todd McFarlane, and that's what we get here. It's best to solidify and put remake away in the discussion here and lock it down to just remaster. They've been very clear about this. It is a remaster, but even taking that into account, there's a lot here that is woefully uncooked. It's built and up-resed on the skeleton of the original game, not like a Halo remake like that 360 version where you could hit a button and see the new effects geometry and the magic of updating. Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning is more, but just barely. It runs on the new systems fine. There's an FOV slider. Some things are upscaled, but that's pretty much it. No matter where you go and where you travel in the game, there's not much that you see adjusted here, offering few technical improvements and very few graphical changes that are possible. It's just ancient looking and feeling, from animation to the worldview itself, and some pop-in that still betrays the game's original problems when it released. Now, none of this should actually be somewhat of a surprise. THQ Nordic actually went out and has said prior, hey, our plan is to buy these IPs and to release remakes and remasters, but to do them for far less money instead of the big budgets and remakes that you may expect. Their plan is to, you know, just do a bit, just a skosh, just take a little off the top. And we think, you know what? There must be something amazing in store because nobody just say that. But I can also make a cheese sandwich using Frito Nacho cheese dip. It doesn't mean I tried to sell you the recipe. And that's really what we're getting here. You're paying for an FOV slider and some up-resing, not much else. Even when it comes to today's market looking like a yesterday's game with last-gen tech, Amalur hits sort of like a dud. It's not wholly without value as the character design. I think it speaks to me the same way as a Fable or a WoW game does. Just me mentioning those two games should give you an instant idea of how old the game looks. It's hardest with those larger locations as well, thematically festooned with their own trappings to make each one feel different as they can. You can never shake the feeling of playing a single-player version of some action mod for the game WoW on a pirated server. And speaking of the PC version, I'm betcha you're like, man, I think this thing probably runs really well. It doesn't. Its performance isn't nearly as good as I expected. 4K 60 isn't smooth at all. Even on the 2080 Ti, there's some frame rate issues. There's also some frame time issues. And I kept thinking to myself, maybe I'm running the game twice or, you know, folding at home with SETI or upscaling my Jenna Hayes collection. Nope. It's just the game. Not always fitting or hitting 60 at 4K. The performance is especially noticeable in later sections when entering some of the cities and towns or places where many monsters inhabit. The FPS drops lower than the graphics being displayed really ever indicate it should. When it comes to graphics, I do like the design. I do like some of the worlds, but this thing feels and looks ancient. And performance isn't really as good as it should be. And that brings us to sound, music, and voice.
We children of nature know our roles. Meek and mighty, prey and predators, life and death. All serve the cycle. You.
But that wasn't enough for me. I joined the Fate Weavers, hoping to find a way to conquer destiny itself.
Thank you.
Grant Kirkhope scored the original game. Good scores lift a game up. They elevate it to even the moments of silence where they're pregnant with wait for that next musical note that can hint at danger or action or the introduction of a new character. Well-done scores and games can turn a Raven's Cry into a God of War. I'm just joking, it can't. There's no possible chance of that. But you get my drift. It does help. From start to finish, it has a very epic feeling to a number of the almost fable-like comedic elements that play. Interludes that fade out to just one or two instruments connecting locations. Travel is actually really good here. However, upon constant and consistent playing, it's very hard not to get lost in the overarching feeling that this was made in response to watching Lord of the Rings like 600,000 times. Lots of fantasy game scores fall into this trope, and Kingdoms gets out of it from time to time, especially a couple tracks that blew me away, but a lot of it ends up falling into generic fantasy very easily. It's whenever the tracks sort of let the world itself and the sound overlap without reflecting an epic battle moment where it's at its strongest. And that brings us to voice. This is nailed. This is where the game originally absolutely beat Skyrim, hands down, just spanked it like a baby. Amalur has some of the best voice in an RPG. You're basically unvoiced, but there's an eclectic and just always interesting and intriguing group of characters around you, handled with extreme care. This is something that Avengers could learn from with their methadone style of acting, where they're like, I am Iron Man. Easily. The highlight of the audio here, though, is that each character does what they have with their voice acting, and it ends up lending individuality to every character, but solidarity to the world. Everyone, even the most over-the-top villain, sounds like they belong within Kingdoms of Amalur. From songs sung to battles won, every voice, well done. Speaking of well done, something that's not really, and that's the sound. It's got an older overall feel to the sound work. It's not really directional in its channeling either, so getting into a battle with a number of enemies doesn't really give a great deal of directional information if you're looking at it from that kind of sound effects positioning. Swords and fire and ice and lightning all have expected samples, and none of them are particularly varied or deep. And I don't know if they've remastered some of these, but it really does show its age, even if they took newer samples and mixed them in with the older ones. At the same time, it is not bad. It's just basic. You have a good base from which to experience the sonic elements of the game with grandeur, but not necessarily the granularity that you may experience with more varied and detailed engines or games from today. And that brings us to gameplay and a bit about the story. You begin the game, and you are one of the Fateless, chosen from one of four races as you start a custom character. Having just recently died in a battle, you are dead, but with the help of a gnome scientist resurrecting you, which sounds about as bad as an idea as you can possibly imagine, you find yourself in the land of the Fae, helping investigate, then fight the invasion of the Tuatha, or Dark Fae of the Lands. You meet with Agarth, the Fate Weaver. This is the man who sees people's ends. When he realizes you can change the fate of the others because you've died and come back, you and he go off to save the world. This is actually an interesting story. Think of a car that drives along the side of the road to get past all the traffic. It can turn out good, or it can turn out absolutely friggin' horrible. What follows is 40 hours of you figuring that out. 40 plus hours. We'll get to length in a second. At the start of the game, you uncover your ability to level up not only your various skills in the world, like the ability to see the unseen or craft better items and break others down, but also various skills that are directly related to the multiple weapons that the game throws at you. Everything from daggers to magical staves to wands that make Harry Potter straight up Avada Kedavra in shame. Every weapon from hammers to circular blades have their own skill tree, and due to the game's length, you are going to consistently be upgrading, switching out, and adjusting weapons. And if anything, the game is liberal with the items you get in the world. If your dream is having four Santas overlapping on Christmas bags, just full of magical loot, stabbing them in the backs as they slide down your chimney, this is the game for you. You begin the game, you start out slowly, taking on a few odd quests and learning the fighting and job system that are connected to the main quest of finding out your own place in this new world. And then you take on more quests and more and more and more. And from characters you hate and characters you like and characters you love, characters that are dead, characters you want to be dead, characters who want you dead or you kill. Faction quests, faction against other factions. Those are all available as well. This game has a ton of side quests. It has quests for days. It shines a light into games of this kind where back then freedom of movement is almost restricted due to the sheer emotional weight of just carrying this many map points and jobs for other people in your brain. Luckily, most of it is easily tracked with the map and quest marking system, but be aware. But the real question, of course, is how does it play? Identical to how it used to, Reckoning doesn't change much in the way of how it works, and the physical reaction, physics reactions, and actions still all being very arcadey in their feel. It's pretty quick twitch, and you can perform heavy and light attacks, create combos, block incoming attacks, as well as carry two weapons during battle to switch out. Now, every weapon stat not only include the various damages they do, including many that are status damages and elemental damages, but also their speed. Have a dagger outfitted and you can stealth assassinate enemies before they can even see you, but they're close range, meaning most of the enemies are out of your reach, so you can bring along your massive hammer and then just pretty much treat everybody like a nail and you're the carpenter. Or you can bring on your bow, which allows you to reach out and touch somebody from a long ways away, but is almost useless when it's up close. This isn't necessarily new stuff. In fact, it's not new stuff at all, but it is what Kingdoms of Amalur original gameplay was based along. You can also don various armors that can be collected in sets, with each piece giving you additional bonuses in the set, or mismatch until your heart's content, so you look like you ran into someone's store and stole everything that was on the shelves. Rings and amulets can also be worn to adjust various statistics. Many items also have slots for magical charms you can attach that you have created, found, or purchased along the way. One place where Kingdom of Amalur Re-Reckoning and the original stand out is you can kill almost everyone in the game world with the ability to go violent even in places that other games don't necessarily allow. You can do this with quests and even some quest givers as well. In the game, I was performing a quest with someone and I found out the quest giver was just sort of a big old piece of shit. So I found them, I pretended everything was fine, and then finished that transaction and tucked him into the world's longest dirt nap right afterwards. And the game didn't miss a beat and let me move on. As you explore through the lands and battle and level up as you do, you will also unlock destinies. Each destiny is slightly unique and offers additional bonuses on top of the ones that you have. Think of them as pretty much just classes, like Jack of All Trades, which gives you an overall generic bonus to much of the attacks, or very specific ones later on that can turn you into Gandalf the Grey if you give it a chance. In a weird way, this all feels much ado about nothing. You can adjust the difficulty to be easier or harder, which is great, with a new very hard option and some adjustments to how they level gate. But so many bonuses and changes and skills and destinies, I found myself actually just wading into combat and switching only when I was really required to, because every single battle resulted in three new weapons, each with a 0.5 difference in their overall attack speed. Also, these have to be some of the richest poor villages I've ever seen, because half of the places just have magical chests that you open up and there's a bunch of stuff inside, just Creed Corner right around the edge, something that any of the characters, who many times will tell you they don't have any money, could have just picked up and sold on their own. I'm not going to complain about those options, though. Each to their own, and if that's your thing, Kingdoms of Amalur offers game players who like this kind of stuff a wealth of choice when it comes to options and how you outfit yourself. As you're running around and doing all these things and taking in the different crafting systems, the ability to break down your weapons, doing some quests, and sort of seeing how this world works, that's where, if you like these kind of games, Kingdoms of Amalur is pretty strong. It's got some good combat when you get up in level, and some good combos, and certainly it is a weapon hoarder's dream. I jumped into this. I know exactly what it was offering from the original game, but it just doesn't feel current enough. And going in there and seeing some of these canned combos, there's also the quick time events. And if you kill enough people, you can do the reckoning mode, which is a slowdown mode, which allows you to basically finish somebody. They sort of make it seem like it's a big deal. And then you realize it was a big deal, maybe back then. It's not so much of a big deal right now. And that brings us to Fun Factor. Re-Reckoning is pretty fun. If you played it or like the original, the combat's been reworked a tiny bit and things are smoother, and the changes to level gating and item leveling, a much needed bonus difficulty, help kick it up a notch and gets you at least into the maybe the year 2015 when it comes to how the game feels, but probably not 2020 when it comes to game design aspects. That really wore off pretty quickly though when it came to fun. Performance isn't necessarily there. It just looks old and it feels old. In many ways, Re-Reckoning is like Jordan's return to basketball. The greatness is there, but it's a faded beast. It's up against competition that shines almost too much for the revisiting star to handle. And problems in the remaster not being completely updated means any issues it actually had originally are just magnified by time. Speaking of time, time is money. And that brings us to the rating. As you guys know, I rate games on a buy, wait for sale, rent, or never touch it again rating system. This is a title where they've offered a 50% discount for people who already own the original title. That would be people who have it, it's still on their Steam account, and they want to get it, they get 50% off. Anybody new still has to pay the price of $39.99. I still think it's wait for a sale. If you are a fan of it and you want to play it, you're getting an FOV slider and some slightly up-res graphics, but not a lot. You're also not getting the greatest performance. When it comes to new people jumping in, that's where you solidly sit. When it comes to the $15 and people just wanting to update, I gotta say, you're already playing the game. You've probably already played it before. If you just want to revisit it, you probably revisit it as old setup. If you decide you don't want to and you want to get it for $15 and you're that big of a fan, you're not going to be necessarily massively disappointed, because there's not some level record-breaking thing here. I did have one crash, and I did finally get that fixed. This is just a game that really comes in a little bit under average when it comes to remasters, and something that I think as remasters continue and remakes continue, we're going to see even more competition in the space. I just want to say 2020 is a shitter. I hope you guys are all taking care of yourselves. You know, follow me on Twitter, Facebook if you can. If you want to talk about games, feel free to post. I'll try to get back to you, but it's been a busy week, busy couple weeks, and will continue to be. You can come to the Patreon. If I found you a game, maybe saved you some cash, that would absolutely help, especially because YouTube just continues to demonetize stuff. Also, got the new shirt designs up. Those shirts are based and inspired on us as gamers, not me. They do say ACG Gaming on them because I got to put some branding on them, but these shirts are based on how you play games. How do you play role-playing games? They're based on particular games. They're inspired by games like Ghost of Tsushima or Horizon Zero Dawn or the upcoming Cyberpunk. Jump on in there, check them out. They're good swag. We got a bunch of people who like them. Very, very happy with that merchandise. Anyway, that's it for me. I hope you guys have an excellent week. Take care of yourselves. Peace out and enjoy the rest of your week.